Good morning, honourable members. And everybody else present here. Everybody is welcome. Our program for today. We were scheduled to start at 9:05 with Rights to Know. We're a few minutes late. We'll have to make up that time. Immediately after Rights to Know, it's Media Monitoring Africa. Then SOS Support Public Broadcaster. Then we have a slot for the minister from about 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock. From 2 to 4 o'clock, I beg your pardon. From 2 to 4 o'clock is the slot for the minister. And from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, as per our program, we had reserved that space for the SABC board to invite whichever witnesses they deemed necessary. So that is our program, and we'll go with it in that fashion. Just to indicate also, and it's a standing apology from our side, the Honourable Waters, as was reported at the first or second meeting, is on parliamentary business, and his apology was accepted. We also know that Honourable Kubisa is otherwise occupied. I think there's some illness within the family, and Honourable Singh is also unavailable. But in their stead, we have the Honourable Swartz and the Honourable Nkwankwa. So that is the full complement from our side as the Portfolio Committee. And of course, Honourable Ndlozi has been ably substituted by the Honourable Mugwena. And I have been informed that Honourable Killian will join us around about 11 o'clock. So that's the compliment from our side. From our guests, they are all here. And I am informed that whilst there is a delegation, the input will be led by Mr. Mr. Micah Reddy will lead on behalf of Rights to Know. But honourable members, there are two points that I think we should make. The first one, it was brought to my attention, and to the former secretary of the SABC, Ms. Caldenes. It has become practice that at the end of each submission, I have invited the witnesses to feel free to approach the committee between now and the 28th. I failed to do so yesterday. I think because I was distracted with the SABC delegation. So that invitation to Ms. Caldenes to, if she so wishes, continue to communicate with the committee is open, and I apologize that I didn't do it as I did with other people yesterday. It was an oversight from my side. And whilst I'm at that point also, in absentia, I wish Ms. Caldenes a blessed Christmas and a prosperous New Year, so that we're not seen to be discriminating against anybody, and we apologize for that. The second point is a more important point, honourable members. At our very first meeting, all members of this committee felt very strongly about the developments, specifically around the SABC 8 as they were known, with regard to intimidation. We made an undertaking that we would engage the powers that be to assist in that regard. We duly did so. Honourable members, yesterday it was brought to my attention that as late as yesterday, threats continued to be directed towards the SABC 8. Now, I regard that as an assault on Parliament, because when members of society are invited to come and give evidence before Parliament towards assisting Parliament with its oversight, and there are people outside there that intimidate those that are assisting in building our democracy, I regard that as an assault on Parliament. We want to reiterate our call to the agencies that are capable and set up to please assist in ensuring that all witnesses appearing before this committee, and indeed any other committee of Parliament, are safe to do so, feel safe to do so, and that certainly Parliament must with one voice condemn any effort to subvert oversight, to subvert the deepening of democracy. And we can only appeal to those that are continuing to intimidate any witness to cease with what it is that they are doing. I thought you must bring that to your attention, honourable members. I'm not sure if you're aware or it has been brought to your attention, but it was brought to my attention very late yesterday that this is in fact what has happened. Having said that, we can continue the business of the day. I note you, honourable Kwankwa, and it's all right. Kwankwa, Swartz, Matangu. Everybody, okay. It's fine. Can we start then with Kwankwa and then go to you, Ma'am Khoza, come down to Swartz, Matangu, Ma'am Fandam, Loliwe, and we'll end with you, Honorable Chauke. Is that in order? 1 minute, please, because we are really running late.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Indeed, we agree with you that this is an assault on Parliament. An assault on Parliament is an assault on our democratic dispensation, on our democracy as a country. And we want, as the United Democratic Movement, to take this opportunity to condemn these acts in the strongest possible terms. In fact, Chairperson, one of the journalists actually shared the text message with me which was sent to them, and I would like to read it to this meeting and to the people of South Africa. It says, "Traitors, protecting your white friends in Parliament who started this, telling lies about your comrades. You were warned, we don't kill blacks, but sit and watch the blood flow." Now, we can't have that. We can't have a situation where Parliament is trying to get to the root cause of problems and trying to play its oversight role, and people who come here are intimidated and death threats are issued willy-nilly. We agree with you in saying, as I conclude, Chairperson, that we should urge the executive authority of Parliament to do everything in its power to try and make sure that we arrest this problem and deal with it and find a solution, and if need be get to the point where we're even able to provide protection as a decision that can be made by them. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. From the ICD. Sorry.
Chair, the African National Congress is there to ensure that the democracy in this country is defended at all costs. And anyone who is trying to intimidate our witnesses and people who are trying to assist this country to move forward is actually militating in a total onslaught against the people of this country. And we are aligning ourselves with you, Chairperson, by calling on the agencies to act immediately on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. From the ACDP side, we also fully align ourselves with you, Chairperson. We find this totally outrageous. We share your sentiment that to intimidate any witness coming to Parliament is an affront and an attack on us as an institution. Bearing in mind, these are not frivolous threats. The evidence before this committee is that a shot or shots were already fired at one of the journalists. We need to take this very seriously, and I'm appreciative of the fact that you are reporting it to the authorities of Parliament. We need to ensure that this does not happen and that witnesses are not intimidated. I cannot stress that enough from our perspective, that it's time that we upheld protection for our witnesses so that no one would be intimidated when they stand up. We've got the witness protection, we've got the Protected Disclosures Act, but this is an affront not only on Parliament but on our rule of law. So I fully support your sentiments, Chairperson. Thank you.
Chair, I align myself with the sentiments already expressed by colleagues. My view is that as much as you have made a call, as much as you will be calling upon the authorities of Parliament, it is appropriate that on behalf of this committee, the ATO committee, that you personally raise the matter with the relevant authorities, especially the organized crime, and that you must be kept posted about the developments on the matter as chairperson, because our process, whilst we may adjourn tomorrow for a shorter season, reconvening next year, we are still continuing with our work, and therefore those kind of threats may actually even affect some of the work that we need to do. So we need to put our foot down. It shall not be allowed. It is indeed a threat to the 55 million South Africans, and we must bring a stop to that kind of thing. But yesterday, we raised the issue with the chairperson of the board, and he said he does not know nothing. So it means SABC does not care about, or the leadership of SABC does not care about what happens to the people in that institution, which is a serious problem.
Thanks, Chair. I agree with what everybody else has said. This matter has been reported to SAPS. The SABC 8 reported it. We reported it as well. I mean, it's been going on for months, and it shouldn't be rocket science to find out where these threats are coming from. They can trace cell phone numbers. I mean, everyone knows, you know, everyone can tell where the threats are coming from. So can we please request an update from SAPS? How far would they with the investigation? Is IRS imminent? Why not? Chair, can we request that? Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, we want to remind whoever is responsible for these threats that South Africa has a constitution and everybody is allowed to voice his or her views. Hands off everybody who has come to witness here, because we are trying to make sure that South Africa lives to her constitution. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. I just want to encourage you, Chair, to continue engaging with the, and the authority will be our National Police Commissioner, and especially when colleagues say that a criminal case already has been opened and all of that. So I think it's important in the best interest of our work you continue doing that work. And the good thing is to have raised this thing again publicly, Chair. I want to commend you for that. But let's engage the authority, as you are mandated by the committee, to engage with the National Police Commissioner on this matter. Thank you.
Mr. Reddy, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages, you are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or a committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. I have been informed, sir, that you have agreed to take an affirmation, so please repeat after me. I solemnly and sincerely declare.
I solemnly and sincerely declare.
And affirm that the evidence.
And affirm that the evidence.
I shall give.
I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Raise your hand. Oh, not raise your hand. I so affirm.
I so affirm.
Thank you very much. It is 9:30. Honourable Advocate Vanara, can we agree that between you and our visitors, you conclude your business at the latest by 10 o'clock? Thereafter, we will open it up to members for engagement. Is that okay with you, sir?
That's perfectly fine, sir. Mr. Reddy, I am not going to be leading you. I just want you to explain to the committee what the right to know represents and who the organization is. What are the issues that you took up with the SABC? And where did that process end? You've got less than 30 minutes to do that.
Thank you, Advocate Vanara. I have a statement prepared, but I will be omitting sections of it in the interest of time. on behalf of the Right to Know campaign, I would like to thank the committee for its work and for calling Right to Know to make an input. I make this statement in my capacity as a member of the Right to Know campaign. Until November 2016, I was an employee of the Right to Know, working as organizer for media freedom and diversity. In that capacity, I was responsible for the campaigns, for coordinating the campaign's work on the SABC. The events that I describe, however, are the subject of a concerted effort, concerted energies of many people, rather than just me as an individual. The Right to Know campaign was launched in 2010. We're a coalition of progressive organizations and activists across South Africa. We deal with a wide range of issues on information access, secrecy, surveillance, media and communication rights, and freedom of expression. And I should emphasize that the Right to Know campaign comprises a diverse range of members, stakeholders, cutting across divides of geography, class, language, race, age, gender, and ideological boundaries. I'd like to speak briefly on Right to Know's interest in public broadcasting. There is more detail in the statement. I'm going to leave out a significant section that is contained in the statement in the interest of time. But it goes without saying that as a public broadcaster, distinct from a state broadcaster,
The SABC is bound by law to inform the public in a politically non-partisan manner and deliver news that is fair, accurate, and captures matters that are of the public interest. The committee no doubt appreciates that the importance of public broadcasting in South Africa is further heightened by the vast inequality that continues to define our country, and which is reproduced not only in material terms, but also in terms of access to information and the media. While wealthy urban South Africans have a wide range of media available to them on a variety of traditional and high-tech platforms, people in poor and rural areas rely primarily on public broadcasting to meet their information needs. Indeed, within the right to know, within our structures, both types of consumers are represented. It is in this context that RTK has been fighting for a more robust, better funded, and more independent public broadcaster. A broadcaster that puts the interests of the public first, that can promote a plurality of views, and which produces hard-hitting news and journalism that is able to expose corruption, abuses of power, and wrongdoing. The events described in the statement followed a period of years of instability and concerning developments at the SABC, including top-down political interference and editorial censorship, a growing climate of fear and self-censorship within the broadcaster, as well as serious financial mismanagement and compromised governance. In May 2016, the SABC issued a statement to announce a unilateral prohibition on footage and coverage of violence at protests on the airwaves, what we'll refer to as the protest ban. This sparked a public outcry, and the Right to Know was one of those first to respond, issuing a statement on 28th of May 2016 to condemn the decision as an unjustifiable act of self-censorship. We said that this protest ban was intended to silence stories and images that those in power would find embarrassing. In our analysis, the protest ban was the same policy pursued by the SABC in the face of civil unrest during the struggle against apartheid, footage of which was also banned from television and radio reports. It seemed clear that the ban was part of a range of editorial changes that had been made to shape a certain narrative in the news media in the lead-up to municipal elections. It is worth noting that the absurdity of the protest ban became clear shortly afterwards when Tshwane erupted in waves of violent protest. It was a leading national news story, yet SABC cameras looked away. It was a clear case where the SABC had disregarded basic editorial codes and was in flagrant violation of its mandate as a public broadcaster to ensure a high standard of accuracy, fairness, and impartiality in news and programs that deal with matters of public interest. The crisis at the SABC was already on the Right to Know campaign agenda, but these events precipitated a renewed focus. The issue was tabled and discussed at the June Provincial Working Group meeting of the Right to Know in Gauteng, Western Cape, and KZN. Members of various grassroots organizations that make up the Right to Know provincial structures expressed serious alarm by the decision of the SABC to censor protests. These members and organizations, which include, for instance, the Thembelihle Crisis Committee, Makausa, Guguletu Backyarders, there are too many to list here, operating in solidarity with like-minded progressive organizations and fighting for a more equal, more open and democratic South Africa, represent economically marginalized working class communities across the country. Members have a twofold interest in the matter of censorship. Firstly, they have an inherent interest in how protests and mass action are covered by the public broadcaster. Secondly, they are by and large consumers of SABC media. And of course, as Right to Know, we have a very strong mandate to focus on issues of media freedom and diversity, and we rely on the public broadcaster for our own communication needs. The events leading to the suspension of the journalists. On 20th of June 2016, Right to Know held a protest gathering at the SABC's offices in Auckland Park. This was in response to the protest ban. It was the first of many such actions, but it bears noting because it appears to have set in motion a chain of events that precipitated widespread protests against the SABC COO, then COO, Claudie Motsoeneng, his allies, the board, or his allies on the board, and his political backers. The Right to Know protest was a peaceful picket outside SABC offices in Auckland Park. The event was properly organized in terms of the law, but later events suggest it was prohibited in terms of the SABC's arbitrary protest ban. Shortly after that, the news media reported that several SABC journalists, the first of those who would become known as the SABC 8, had been suspended after they disagreed with an instruction during a diary conference not to cover the Right to Know protest. Those were economics editor Tandeka Kobule, RS Gier executive producer Fute Krige, and senior journalist Suna Fenter. This development escalated the public alarm and set off further events. In the coming days and weeks, several other SABC journalists came to the defense of their suspended colleagues and journalist integrity more broadly. As the committee will know, in total, 8 SABC journalists were suspended and later fired under completely unlawful circumstances, 7 of whom the broadcaster later reinstated with no further explanation. This led to further protest action at the SABC. The decision that our protest on the 20th of June should not be covered. During this time, a grouping of concerned organizations and people started to work together intensively to provide a unified response to the growing crisis at the SABC. Among those were the Right to Know, the SOS Coalition, unions such as the Broadcasting, Electronic Media and Allied Workers Union, BEMAU, and the Media Workers Association of South Africa and Media Monitoring Africa, as well as various civil society organizations, media workers, and concerned members of the public. Through public meetings in Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban, we coordinated rolling protest action in the weeks and months following the June 20 protest. According to my records, Right to Know organized or supported 16 protests at SABC offices in Joburg, Cape Town, Durban, Kimberley, and Mangaung, as well as others at ICASA, the Department of Communications in Pretoria, and Parliament in Cape Town. During this time, numerous memoranda were handed to the SABC, to SABC representatives in various offices to raise concerns about various aspects of the SABC crisis. None has received a response. I'd like to just briefly elaborate on our attempts at direct engagement with the SABC. In our initial interview, Advocate Vanara asked for information about interactions with SABC management over our various concerns. In the weeks following the protest ban, the 20 June protest at SABC, and the suspension of members of the SABC 8, public pressure against the censorship, purges, and management's heavy-handed and obstinate style mounted. The committee will be familiar with these events, but I'll provide some more details. During this time, I was contacted by various SABC staff members and former staff members who informed me of intimidation and harassment from management, threats and punitive actions against anyone who failed to toe the Saudi line, and a pervasive climate of fear at the SABC. On Friday, July 1, Right to Know participated in a protest led by media workers, media worker representatives, and a coalition of civil society. This was a march from the SABC to the Constitutional Court. And during the march, 2 members of the Right to Know, myself and Stina Molapo, joined a delegation to meet with an SABC delegation, including Mr. Motsoeneng himself. And that took place at the SABC headquarters in Auckland Park. During this meeting, we demanded the immediate reinstatement of the suspended SABC journalists. Mr. Motsoeneng attempted to distance himself from the decision. saying that it was an HR decision and that he was therefore powerless to meet our demands. His attempt to evade any responsibility was disingenuous, as it was clear that Mr. Motsoeneng exercised total control over such matters and is highly likely to have been directly involved in their suspension. Our delegation pointed out that Mr. Motsoeneng could halt the compromised disciplinary processes against the journalists with a mere phone call, but he remained obstinate. Eventually, Mr. Motsoeneng agreed that he would look into the matter and report back to the same delegation the following Monday at an agreed-upon time. However, Mr. Motsoeneng acted in bad faith. On Monday, the delegation reconvened in Braamfontein in preparation for the meeting with the SABC management as agreed. But shortly before the meeting was due to start, we received a phone call from Mr. Motsoeneng, which he basically said that the meeting was off, that he had made up his mind, and that there was nothing to talk about, and that the journalists would not be reinstated. The committee will know that on 26 July 2016, the Labour Court overturned the dismissals of four of the SABC 8, reinstating them. On 27 July, after those reinstated journalists were blocked by security from entering their place of work, Right to Know members protested at Auckland Park against this abuse of worker rights. However, later that day, it was announced without explanation that seven of the eight had been reinstated. I am confident that the committee will hear further, has heard further evidence on this matter from other sources. I raise it here because to date there has been no full accounting of who was behind these flagrant abuses of worker rights and under what circumstances the reversal happened. Allow me to briefly outline our key concerns and demands. Following engagements of the various allied groupings mentioned above, a set of demands grew as the crisis progressed and the focus of our collective efforts broadened. These were listed in a number of public statements and memoranda that were handed to SABC management and regional directors. While these demands and variations of them were broadly supported by numerous organizations, for the Right to Know campaign, these included, number one, the immediate reinstatement of the SABC 8. It was clear from the outset that the eight journalists were simply purged for exercising their independence and speaking out against the extremely authoritarian actions of management. Number two, an end to censorship policies. We noted that the SABC was increasingly leaning towards politically biased coverage and at times actively suppressing the views and content deemed to be critical of the ruling elite. Examples include the SABC's refusal to screen Emmy award-winning documentary Miners Shut Down, and the shelving of the SABC commissioned documentary on apartheid corruption, Project Spear. The canning of critical news shows, such as The Editors and On the Record. The unilateral prohibition on SABC broadcast journalists reading newspaper headlines on air. The prohibition on broadcasting footage of violent protest. Though ICASA had found that this policy should be withdrawn, the order has been disregarded, as we have heard. And then in engaging media, Right to Know members and leaders have had frequent interactions with SABC journalists and producers covering Right to Know's work. While we have great respect and appreciation for these workers, we have encountered many instances which point to a climate of self-censorship at the public broadcaster where certain issues are considered taboo. Another core demand was the withdrawal of the unlawfully revised editorial policies. It is a matter of record that the SABC unlawfully revised its editorial policies, failing to properly undertake the required public consultation process. It is a basic principle of good public service media practice that management should not be allowed to interfere arbitrarily in the day-to-day editorial decisions of the newsroom. But the new policy says that content should be referred upwards for approval, giving Mr. Motsoeneng and others sweeping powers to interfere with the work of editors and journalists. We demanded that the new policy be withdrawn and redrafted after a full and meaningful public participatory process. This matter has been taken to ICASA by the SOS Coalition and Media Monitoring Africa. Our fourth key demand was the removal of Mr. Motsoeneng. We have consistently said that the former SABC COO, Claudio Motsoeneng, is patently unfit for the job. Despite findings by the public protector and several courts that he is unqualified and was irregularly appointed as COO, Mr. Motsoeneng has retained a senior executive position at the SABC. It is a matter of public record that Mr. Motsoeneng has been instrumental in purging and victimizing staff, often in flagrant disregard of labor law. We are particularly troubled by reports of the involvement of the State Security Agency in identifying whistleblowers at the SABC and clamping down on those who are disclosing details of mismanagement to the public. It is my hope that the committee will ask us more about this and that these very serious abuses regarding the State Security Agency are not drowned out in the sea of other scandals surrounding the SABC. This dictatorial management also comes at considerable cost to the public. For example, Mr. Motsoeneng ignored regulations by increasing his salary from 1.5 million to 2.4 million and beyond, and hiked the salaries of other selected staff, inflating the salary bill by 29 million rand at the struggling broadcaster. It has been reported that the SABC has been called to the CCMA in 190 matters in the past 2 years. Number five, the dissolution of the SABC board. It is clear that the board has involved itself in all manner of irregular decisions and failed to exercise its duties and provide good governance at the SABC. It is our belief that the board was captured by an untouchable employee of the organization, namely Mr. Motsoeneng, and that it needed urgently to be dissolved and for new members to be appointed through a transparent participatory process. The resignation of various board members has rendered the board incorrect, hastening the urgency for a new a new board to be appointed. Number six, the removal of Minister of Communications, Faith Mutambi. During her tenure, Minister Mutambi has been directly implicated in political interference that has undermined the independence of the SABC as a public broadcaster. The memorandum of incorporation signed by the minister in 2014, The memorandum of incorporation signed by the minister in 2014 gave her an inappropriate level of influence over governance decisions at the broadcaster, including overarching powers to influence the appointments and removals of board members and executives. No doubt in the course of this inquiry, the committee will learn more about the irregular interference of the minister in SABC's governance. We believe her conduct has seriously damaged the public broadcaster and media freedom, and she is not suitable to continue to serve as Minister of Communications. We believe the unlawfully revised editorial policies, giving Mr. Motsoeneng ultimate editorial authority, and the memorandum of incorporation, concentrating power in the hands of the Minister of Communications, have given two individuals extraordinary and unchecked influence at the SABC. These two developments have grossly undermined the independence of the SABC, as well as the power of the board and the role of parliament, and ultimately did damage to public broadcasting as a whole. We describe this as a form of state capture. Work before the ad hoc committee. The Right to Know campaign welcomes the steps to establish an ad hoc committee and to hold a formal inquiry into serious damage that has been done to the public broadcaster. R2K has been disappointed that Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Communications did not take further action on the SABC crisis when it met in August. Subsequent events, notably the SCA ruling on Motsoeneng's appointment, have made the position of Motsoeneng and the sole remaining board member completely untenable. I wish to put it on record that we have some concerns regarding the limited scope of the inquiry. The crisis at the SABC will be at risk of repeating itself if the underlying structural factors that enabled this crisis in the first place are not rectified. Simply put, it will not be enough to simply shake up the current management without strengthening governance mechanisms to guard against political interference. This must include addressing the extraordinary and unlawful powers exercised by Minister Mutambi, who has systematically undermined the SABC's independence by substituting the Companies Act for the Broadcasting Act, that Parliament reaffirm its role in appointments and removals of board members, and make explicit that the Minister does not do this at her own discretion, ensuring that the board is reconstituted through a transparent and open parliamentary process, a public participatory process to review the structures of the SABC and even its charter, and establishing measures to protect and promote editorial independence at the SABC. Lastly, we are concerned that the committee has not taken the opportunity to get input from affected media worker structures, in particular BEMAWU and the Media Workers Association of South Africa. Their members have been directly affected by the conduct of Mr. Motsoeneng and his allies. We call on the committee to consider getting testimony from these stakeholders. It is our sincerest hope, however, that this committee will result in meaningful steps being taken to halt and reverse the rot at the public broadcaster and hold account SABC management for their trickery and lies and for flouting due process, defying Parliament, insulting the intelligence of the public, and running the SABC as if it were their own fiefdom and not a crucial public institution and asset. Enormous damage has been done, and it will take enormous political will to undo it, but it can be done. We remain hopeful, we remain committed to that vision, as you do, of an independent, vibrant, well-run, and well-funded public broadcaster that holds power to account, meets the needs of our diverse nation, and remains a public asset in the hands of the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reddy. The document that you are presenting, can we, with your permission, have it?
Want a hard copy?
Yes, a signed hard copy. It might not be now, later on, but can we get a copy?
Yes, of course.
Chair, no further questions.
Thank you very much, Advocate Banara. I'm embarrassing, I never told you. Can we start with you, Chauke? I know that you're up to it. I'm sorry.
No.
We'll start with Chauke, and we'll go all the way around. Honourable members, because we need to buy time, can I limit you strictly to 5 minutes? Thank you.
Now, it may be lesser than that, Chair, because the right to know is straight to the point, in fact. Thank you very much and appreciate the work that has been done by your organization. In fact, that really demonstrates a citizen's relay and your commitment to the country and making sure that our democracy works and it works properly. That is highly appreciated. There are 2 points that I just want to get from you, which is part of what we have dealt with during the hearing. The issue of the state security. How far have you picked up the involvement of state security in regard to, you know, a intimidation or harassment of staff? Because that has been one of the areas that freedom of expression seems to be suppressed now at the SABC, that workers and staff can't even speak freely, even to, you know, telephonically. They need to go outside the SABC to speak freely. So that means that freedom is now being suppressed inside the SABC. What is your view on that, and what have you picked up?
Thank you, Honourable Chauke. If I may, I will refer you to Murray Hunter, who is our expert on security and secrecy matters. Is that permissible?
I only have 5 minutes of my question. I don't mind to leave the rest and just listen to what you want to share with us. Maybe in the next 4 minutes of remaining.
Yeah, you know, I did ask Cindy who's going to speak, because this is a serious matter. Now, and you indicated, sir, that you're going to speak and you took the oath. I'm reluctant to allow other people to speak, so unfortunately you're going to have to carry it.
Okay. The committee has heard of the state security issue previously. This has come up a few times in the course of the proceedings, I believe. Just to underscore some of the cases of state security involvement. In January 2014, Ellen Tshabalala allegedly warned staff that their communications were being monitored. That's one instance. Bemawu has also reported that Durban staff were ordered to clear out of their offices for a number of hours while state security did unknown things in their offices. The state security agency also was brought in to stop leakers, we believe. And then we heard, the committee also heard that that Mr. Kalata said that as an employee an employee of the parliamentary news team had her computer seized by so-called SABC forensics, the SABC forensic department, who charged that she had leaked information to the DA.
Propose that with the rest of the information, maybe through the chair, you can maybe hand over the detailed information to the chair of the committee, so that I can then move to my second question, because it's clear that you're still trying to find your foot into extracting the rest of the information. But if that information can be given to the chair or the committee, will really be appreciated. My last question, obviously, is around, you raised the issue of stakeholders, especially the workers' organizations, that they are not being afforded an opportunity. What will be your proposal? Because the committee currently operates with a particular timeline, and the issue of stakeholders, which were identified by the committee, were specifically to deal with a particular area. Now you are coming up with other stakeholders which are key role players. What will be your suggestion now that you have looked into the program of the committee?
Well, it's ultimately for the committee to decide. We are concerned that they were not included in the program, given that they represent the interests of a large number of SABC staff. This came as a surprise to us. I'm not sure what sort of arrangements the committee could make to include their voices, but we do think it's important that they are consulted in this process, especially considering that they have had they have a significant presence at the SABC, have had significant involvement in pushing back against SABC management.
Okay, ma'am, the last one, obviously.
It's up, sir.
Okay.
Honourable Fandau.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much for that presentation, Micah. I think part of the thing that we're going to have to do as a committee beyond just the inquisitorial process is also give a series of recommendations to the National Assembly about what needs to happen at the SABC. So you've listed those recommendations, which I think we will take under consideration. But beyond that, about fixing the SABC, because there's clearly serious problems there. Can you speak a little bit more in detail about your suggestions about how we fix the SABC?
Thank you. The crisis that we have witnessed at the SABC is plainly unprecedented, and we have said that this calls for a fitting emergency response, and that, we have said, should entail public participation. And if need be, it should mean going back to the drawing boards. The SABC was radically transformed from a mouthpiece of the apartheid government, the apartheid state, into a... It was a complicated process. It was not without its problems, but in many ways, the SABC of the 1990s that was being transformed, that was undergoing this process of transformation, was in many ways a model of transformation. And that's precisely because it was a very inclusive process. If you look, I think it would be instructive for the committee to look at, for instance, the BBC, which is, again, not without its flaws, not without its problems, but every few years, the BBC's charter is up for renewal. And there has been a process, an ongoing process in the UK of renewing and restructuring the BBC. And that, I read at the time of the SABC crisis, at the time of our ongoing protests, that in that process of restructuring the BBC, something in the region of 220,000 public submissions were handed in. Now, I think that's something to aspire to, a truly inclusive, democratic, open process of reformulating the SABC. I mentioned in my presentation that it may be necessary even to look at the very foundations of our SABC, to perhaps revisit, if need be, the SABC's charter, which may contain some slightly problematic provisions. The same applies to the Broadcasting Act. There may be certain provisions within the Act and the Charter that need to be strengthened so that there is more to separate management and the whims of management from the day-to-day running of the newsroom. We perhaps should also look at the location of the editor-in-chief. Now, there is litigation around this, but part of the problem with the SABC at the moment, part of the reason for this crisis is because Mr. Motsoeneng has such unbridled control over editorial content. And he is given the levers of editorial control, and through him, the state and the ministry are given unprecedented, unacceptable levels of power over editorial control. And so we believe that mechanisms need to be put in place to guard against political interference, that governance structures need to be put in place to strengthen editorial independence, to give journalists and editors more freedom, more prerogative to take decisions without overbearing management and without the threat of politicians harassing and purging and threatening them. And again, all of this, I must stress, all of this needs to be truly participatory. It's a public institution. It's a tremendous public asset, and we all have a huge stake in the public broadcasting.
Time is up. I should have said this earlier on, colleagues. You know, even if your phone is on silent, it interrupts or it interferes with the transcription that is happening. So I see visitors walking in and out with their phones. Could we request that you put your phone off? Otherwise, we're going to pick up problems going forward. Please put your phones off. Honorable Oliver.
Thanks, Chair. Michael, within the South African context, is SABC the worst or best broadcaster and why?
Sorry, could you please repeat the question?
Within the South African context, is SABC the worst or best broadcaster? Whatever choice you take, why?
In some sense, the SABC is the best broadcaster. It is the most accessed media organization in the country. It is a media staple for millions of South Africans and is the most influential broadcaster in the country. SABC management, however, exhibits some of the worst, most authoritarian tendencies, most anti-democratic tendencies that are increasingly posing a threat to our constitutional democracy. So it's the best and the worst. It has some of the best journalists. We've seen the SABC 8 appear before this inquiry. We've seen them demonstrate enormous courage and enormous integrity in the face of very serious threats not only to their livelihoods, but in the case of some, to their lives. And that for me is the best of journalism, to be able to hold power to account like that. That sort of bravery and that sort of integrity is certainly exhibits the best, not only in South Africa, in the world, the best sort of journalism. But managerial style, SABC's management is the worst of the worst. They have ruled the SABC like a tin pot dictatorship.
I have looked at the principles guiding you. I've just checked that. Is it within your call to go a step further to say so and so should go, so and so should not go? Is that within your scope?
I don't see why it wouldn't be within our scope to make demands as concerned members of the public who genuinely feel that certain high-powered individuals have been flagrantly abusing their authority.
Thank you very much, Honorable Oliver. Can we go to Honorable Kota?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, sir. I can assure you that we would like to strengthen our relationship as Parliament with civil society organizations. And whatever that you are putting forward to us, we are taking it seriously. And at an appropriate time, we will consider all the submissions. Sir, I just want to understand you better. Is the right to know only limited to media freedom, or does it also concern itself with the financial sustainability of the SABC?
To some extent, the two things are inseparable. We believe in media freedom and media diversity, that media diversity and media freedom are two sides of the same coin. And in order for there to be meaningful media diversity in this country, that, as I said in my statement, is deeply unequal, not only in material terms, not only in wealth and income, but that is also replicated in access to media.
No,
so we have to...
Okay, no, I understand. I just want to check with you whether you have seen the multi-choice contract of your, you've heard about it. And what do you make of it in terms of SABC future revenue streams? I must also confess with you, I only read that contract because it was only made available to us recently, only yesterday, and I became concerned about a number of areas in that contract. But I just want to hear from you, your own perspective, as the right to know, since you have said, you know, these two things, I'm usually not exclusive.
For a while now, we have been raising the alarm about the multi-choice contract. It reeks of something dubious, and like so many deals, as we have heard in the process of this inquiry, like so many deals at the SABC, it was done in a way that appears improper, and we have reason to question many of the deals that SABC management has cut. We have long said that this deal is not in the interests of the public broadcaster, that it would end up auctioning off the SABC's crown jewels, its archives, and basically selling the SABC down the river. We certainly are concerned about a deal like this with what is the most powerful media company in the country.
Okay. Now, I just wanted to get that because going forward, we need to know whether we have the support of the civil society. Finally, I just want to know, you said that there are 190 cases that have been to CCMA. Do you have the breakdown and the levels and the type of grievances that are there? You may not have that information right here, right now, but I'm just saying, do you have it somewhere? And can you provide that to us? Because it will, if we do have, it will certainly help with the analysis when we wind up this process.
This was reported in City Press. I would imagine that if we consult our allies in the unions, we could probably get more details on these.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Honourable Swartz?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your input. We just want to commend you for the work you've done as an NGO over the years, and in particular with this issue. Thank you for organising the protests and the civil society's sense of outrage at what has been happening at the SABC. Could I just ask you, you touched on the relationship between the Companies Act and the Broadcasting Act, and in our view, we're very clear on this, that when it comes to the appointment of the board members and the removal of office of board members, that is determined by the Broadcasting Act, which sets out in Section 13, appointed by the President on the advice of the National Assembly. Section 15, the appointing body, that is the President, on advice of the National Assembly again. So those steps that were taken by the Minister to remove board members would, in our view, be unlawful. What is your comment on that?
That's precisely what I meant in my statement, that Minister Mutambi's reading of the Companies Act as trumping the Broadcasting Act is wrong and unlawful. We said this at the time, where specific legislation is designed to govern a specific institution, as in the case of the SABC, it cannot be trumped by, it cannot be overruled by broader legislation, such as the Companies Act.
And this yesterday also came up when we had the company secretary, and she held a very strong view that the Companies Act trumps the Broadcasting Act. So it is a matter of dispute, but it might be helpful to make it clearer in legislation that there is no doubt, and that might be something that we might need to have a look at a legislative amendment if there is a difference of views. In our view, it's pretty clear, but it seems the SABC seems to hold a different view.
Yes, indeed. And if the if the Companies Act were the governing piece of legislation, if the Companies Act, if the SABC were governed in terms of the Companies Act, like any other state-owned corporation, it would no longer be a public broadcaster. It would be a state broadcaster.
And it sets out a lot of duties in the Broadcasting Act, which is fundamental to the SABC. Could I then just ask, Dr. Kosa asked you about the 190 matters at the CCMA. Did you indicate that, could I ask if I missed the answer, could you give us information in writing on those, or do you have more information on the exact people involved, the period? Do you have more detailed information on that?
The story was reported in City Press, but as I mentioned to your colleague, we could potentially get more information on that from the media unions.
And then, just going forward again, you've made a very helpful statement that will be circulated to all of us, but going forward for our deliberations, feel free, and I'm sure, Chair, you will give that offer again, as we are deliberating to the heart of the issues, suggested fundamental changes that we might consider, whether it's changes to legislation, changes to policy, feel free to help us as we deliberate. It's no good just one or two slight changes. We've got to go to the heart of the problem. So, Chair, thank you. That's all from my side.
Honourable Mathango.
Chair, thank you. thank you to you, sir. And my colleagues have already commended you for the work done. Just a few questions. The first one is, you've raised the issue of those in the SABC that were purged. One would assume that you would know that those that were purged were replaced. Do you know as to who replaced them and what is the standing of those replacements?
Sorry, there were sweeping purges at the SABC over the last few months. Are you referring to specific individuals?
No, yeah, well, I don't know. I'm just asking you a question. You had people who were purged from what you were saying, and one would assume that they were replaced. Now, the question is, because we need to fix this situation. Do you perhaps, have you done some work to establish as to who replaced those that were purged and what is their character? You know, so that if we finally have to make a recommendation, if indeed certain things have gone wrong even there, as to how do we correct it. So I'm saying, if you know that a good person has been replaced by this horrible person, and you know the character of this person, it can actually help the committee to make an informed decision.
I think that SABC insiders would be better placed to answer this question. There was an awful lot of purges and reshuffles and redeployments at the SABC. A lot of that was about centralizing power around Mr. Motsoneng. I don't have that many names on hand, but we could contribute to this. We could go back and do some research on who replaced whom and so forth. But it was more than just the SABC 8, as this committee well knows.
And you are aware of the court decision on Mr. Motsoeding?
Yes, I'm aware.
So you shouldn't be a stress anymore.
I beg your pardon?
I'm saying you shouldn't be a stress anymore.
We hope.
Chair, the other question I'd like to raise, and I know it's a bit of a... I don't know whether I'm fair with that question. As an organization, and indeed I know you've spoken about the review of the editorial policy, it would be interesting to know, but perhaps it may not be something that we may get it now, as to the right of the things we shouldn't know. Do we have those things that we should not know that your organization possesses?
Sorry, are you speaking in general terms about freedom of expression and what...
Yes. I know that this is a specific matter that we are dealing with, which we agree with, but I'm just asking because personally I would like to take the matters forward even outside this engagement. Have you, as an organization, do you possess these things that we should not know as part of your organization?
I think we've been very open and transparent throughout. We generally like to practice what we preach, so we're not withholding any information that we think is...
That's not the question. Look, there are these things that the public broadcaster should bring to the public, and I think that's the approach. But would you be in a position to help us to say, whilst we are pursuing this agenda, but we believe that these are the things that should not be brought to the public, if there be any?
Yes, we may differ substantially over what should be kept secret and what should be publicly available. Our position is that openness and transparency should be the rule and secrecy should be the exception. But it would depend on what information you're speaking about specifically.
Chair, my time is over, I suppose. If not, I still have a nice question.
Even if it wasn't over, I was going to ask you to stop and pursue this matter offline.
Okay.
But your time is over.
Okay.
Honorable Mukwena.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you. We meet again. I'm going to ask you for two inputs in sort of one session, so I'm going to ask you two things at the same time. The debacle at the SABC, underpinned by interference from political powers, has clearly interfered in government issues, in editorial bias, the quality of information that society is getting. How further down the line is it affecting society? In terms of strengthening democracy, dissemination of information, and social cohesion, those issues. That's the one set. And then you also spoke of state capture. State capture is a wide subject, and it affects, I think, many parts of society. We heard, for instance, of the CEO of Eskom going into offices of the SABC and dictating to the SABC what they should be disseminating and what not. What other, and then also the state security involved in investigations, what other organs of state and parts of the executive should be investigated in this inquiry in order for us to get a fuller picture? Thanks.
Thank you. How this affects things down the line, I think it's fairly self-evident how a compromised public broadcaster that is as important as the SABC would negatively affect democracy. I don't think I need to explain to this House how important public broadcasting is for democracy and how important knowledge and the free flow of information are for democracy. Now, the SABC is, as I said, the most accessed broadcaster in the country. For many people, it is pretty much their sole source of news and current affairs information. And if you deprive people of that, if you distort that narrative, restrict that narrative, or control that narrative for narrow political interests, I think it's quite obvious what the effect on democracy would be. And this is something that's recognized in the Constitution and in the laws governing the public broadcaster. Not so much in the Companies Act, which is why we say the Companies Act should not be trumped by the Broadcasting Act. But the free flow of information and freedom of expression are the very lifeblood of democracy. I think it would be hard to debate that. And the public broadcaster has a role to inform people, to facilitate the free flow of information, to tell the stories of South Africa and South Africans in all their diversity, and to encourage and promote freedom of expression. So it has a very critical place in our democracy. In terms of state capture and what other organizations should be investigated, we've mentioned state security, the role of state security. We think that's very concerning and would like to see that given a prominent place in the deliberations of this inquiry. We would like very much for the inquiry to really take into account how serious this is, to have the spooks snooping around our state broadcaster and intimidating journalists. Of course, this will have a chilling effect on journalism in South Africa, on journalists whose sources may very well be at risk. I was asked earlier about what information can justifiably be withheld or kept secret. I may have misunderstood the question somewhat, but one thing that does need to be kept secret in the interests of journalism and democracy is sometimes sources need to be protected, and particularly whistleblowers. We've seen what happened to members of the SABC 8 who came out and took a stand, and we've seen that some of them have had very serious threats on their lives. And so to have spies snooping around the SABC, we think is a very worrying sign. We don't know what information they were looking for. We heard the report, I think it was by Mr. Kalata, who said that a parliamentary reporter's computer was confiscated. And, of course, she would have had very sensitive documents on there. She would have had sensitive information that certainly shouldn't end up in the possession of spies. Most importantly...
Thank you, sir. Honorable Konkwa.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, kudos to you, my fellow countrymen and women. I think you're doing an excellent job. I have participated in one or two of your demonstrations, the last one obviously being the C-point one for me. I was very happy to hear you right at the beginning to admitting and acknowledging the fact that the problems at SABC extend beyond the protest policy. I think the protest policy, as you rightly said, is a symptom of an underlying problem at SABC. There are fundamental problems that need to be addressed in order for us to get the SABC working again, in order for the principles of good journalism to take root in that institution again. But you highlighted, you asked a very important point, in fact you raised it, saying that the process of the appointment of the board members should be made more transparent. As a member of parliament, I was under the impression that the process was transparent, but in any event, there's always room for improvement. What exactly would you like parliament, in the process of appointing and recommending board members to the president, would you like us to improve? That's the first question. The second question has to do with the, I understand that you'd focus more on the SABC because it's a national broadcaster. But now the question or the criticism that is usually leveled against Right to Know is that it tends to overly focus on the national broadcaster. Yes, it's got a big footprint and a host of other benefits, but sometimes at the expense of those institutions that are privately owned, which could also be lobbied to play a critical role in ensuring access to information and providing information in a non-partisan manner. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Regarding your first question on appointments, it's our feeling that Parliament has, to some extent, let the minister usurp its duties in terms of board oversight, and this relates to appointments and removals. The inquiry would have heard about the controversial removal of certain board members. This seems to have been done in a very improper way with undue influence of the minister. We have also said in the past that the public protector's appointment is a sort of benchmark, is a good example of, for whatever reservations people may have about the public protector, her appointment process was participatory, was open, the public had a very significant interest in the appointment to the position, and a lot of South Africans were very closely monitoring the appointment process. So we would argue that if any new board, a reconstituted board of the SABC, should follow that sort of process, where there is a call for public nominations, where every interview is available for public scrutiny, where every CV is available for public scrutiny, where the public can really go through each and every candidate with a very fine comb. So we would want to see that sort of process emulated in appointing a new SABC board, and that should not just be a once-off thing. It should be the way of appointing and removing board members. That it certainly should not be up to the whims of the minister. With regards to R2K focusing on the SABC at the expense of other news organizations, I'm sure you're referring to mainstream commercial news organizations. We have faced this criticism before, and we feel that it is unjust. For a very long time, we have been calling for serious changes to the media landscape, for more diversity, and a lot of the time the focus of our campaign for media diversity has been the corporate media. We have protested outside NASPERS, we have consistently said that media monopolies should be broken up. We have protested outside ANN7 when the ANN7 journalists were facing suspension and dismissal around the same time as the SABC crisis. We have worked with journalists at ENCA regarding union issues. So we do call out the commercial media. We are, as far as other civil society organizations and NGOs go, we are very critical, I think, of the mainstream media. Our focus on the SABC has reached a high point in recent months precisely because of this crisis. It is, as I have said, unprecedented. This is different to other media organizations in the sense that it is the public broadcaster. We all have a huge stake in it. It is a key institution of democracy. So for that reason, because of just how egregious the wrongdoings of SABC management were, and because of how important this institution is and how important it is for our own constituents, for our constituent organizations, most of whom rely very heavily on the SABC, it seems to me perfectly rational that this is a major focal point for us.
No, thank you, sir. To you and your team, thank you very much for providing us with that information. Members have asked for further information from yourself, and you have undertaken to go and do some work. So please feel free to provide that information. Let me indicate you don't provide it to the member that requested it. It comes through the office. So when you have that information, please provide it. Also bear in mind that our deadline is the 28th of February, so it will be in all our interest that it's provided as soon as is possible so that it can be, if necessary, incorporated in our report to Parliament at the end of this process. Having said that, to you and everybody else that accompanied you, thank you very much, and wishing you well over the festive season, and may you see a prosperous 2017. Members, you've got 2 minutes. Our next guests are here. 2 minutes whilst we do the turnover, and we will immediately get on to media monitoring. All right. Members have asked for a slight caucus. Can we just quickly run to V8 for a slight caucus, members?
M-I-C-A-H.
M-I-C-A-H?
Ready.
R-E-D-D-Y. It's not Misha, it's Mika.
Not Mika, he's pronounced it Mika. He says Mika. Mika,
yeah.
Not Mika, yeah. What do you say?
What is his position at Artica? Morning. He was, but now he's volunteering. He was coordinating, campaign, something.
I just call him the right to know as Micah Reddy.
Yes. He was something until November, and then now he's just volunteering.
Whatever.
You can ask him, where is his pen?
How is he? I'm just taking this thing. I'm not interested
in this.
I'm
here
to play.
Auntie,
all. Yeah.
Thank you. intimidating text message that he said one of the journalists who testified here on Monday had received. Smith just referred to being informed late yesterday that there had been further threats.
After
their testimony, yeah.
They didn't say
how many. And Kwanka didn't name who that particular text was sent to, and the text said something like, "Traitors protecting your white friends in Parliament who started this. You're warned. We don't kill blacks, but sit and watch the blood flow."
We don't kill blacks?
But sit and watch the blood flow.
We don't kill.
Do you want MMA presentation? Yeah. Really cool. We've got it on Flash. If you
So did you want this presentation? Chan? Do you want the presentation from MMA coming up now?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you mind emailing it to me once you've downloaded it?
I just want to keep my voice. There's nothing
going to
corrupt my computer.
Nothing hostile. We know all about the surveillance.
Yeah, please, no.
Great. The folder called Tandy. And then it should be...
Tandy. You don't feel black. What's the blood show?
No, it's not. There's any music here.
Okay, go out.
That one.
Okay,
can I
just open it?
Okay.
Oh, it's new format. That's
yeah.
XP
Windows
10.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I've got a PDF version of it, but it's on my laptop. I can give it.
Can you email us?
I can.
You know what would be best? You could get like the email or card, and then you can just get it out in the mail.
I thought I could make you read out that thing.
Yeah. It says, quote, traitors, and then protecting your white friends in Parliament who started this.
Yeah.
You're warned.
Mm-hmm.
We don't kill blacks, but sit and watch the blood flow. Oh, no, I didn't tweet it because I didn't tweet it.
But you didn't say who it was sent to. It was
you didn't say who it got sent to.
But it was one.
It was one of the four. It was forwarded to him by the person who received it.
And this is Tata, no?
Huh?
Was it read out by Tata?
Kwankwa. Baba Yon.
Jesus.
No, that is fucking hectic.
So we don't get paid tomorrow. We don't get paid tomorrow.
Please don't remind me of that.
I hate December. I hate being up so early.
Yeah, but at least with Prime Media, you get paid again on the 20th. That's a bit.
No, we're getting paid.
Because I heard you guys are getting paid on the
20th. Early. We're getting paid tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. We're also supposed to. You're getting paid on the 20th, and apparently we're getting paid on the 19th, which is Monday.
On the 19th. A day earlier. You're like special, eh?
No, we're just separate.
I'm just focusing on.
I'm really not interested in they've all said it before.
What?
All the all the stuff they've said before.
I know, that's why I'm just going through.
Yeah, me too. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
I'd like to know as well.
It's MMA, Media Monitoring Africa, and then the SOS.
Ah, it's you.
We must give him our email address. He'll email us. Well, they're not here, so I think they're just because it's. I think they're just giving them an opportunity to.
Maybe they'll show up at school.
Please, no.
No. But also, why is it only a 6 o'clock? It's 4 to 6.
Because the minister's between 2 and 4, no?
Thank you.
Is this it?
Can maybe please settle down? Advocate Venata.
Tell me that MMA stuff. Did you get the MMA?
Somebody locate the advocate.
They won't open. They're going to email us the...
Whilst we're waiting for the advocate, please ask him to come round the back. Honourable members, we have Media Monitoring Africa that will present, and I'm informed that both Mr. William Bird and Tandy Smith will participate actively. So what I will do is read your rights and responsibilities and protection for both of you, and then ask you individually to make an oath or an affirmation. Is that okay? All right. So, William Byrd and Tandy Smith. Please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Could we start with you, please, Tandy? Repeat after me. And I am informed that you're going to affirm. I solemnly and sincerely declare.
I solemnly and sincerely declare.
And affirm.
And affirm.
That the evidence I shall give.
That the evidence I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
My dreams in Parliament
have started
this.
I so affirm.
I so affirm.
Mr. Byrd,
about your comrades.
I solemnly and sincerely declare,
I solemnly and sincerely declare,
and affirm,
and affirm
that the evidence I shall give,
that the evidence I shall give,
will be the truth,
will be the truth,
the whole truth,
the whole truth,
and nothing but the truth,
and nothing but the truth.
I so affirm.
I so affirm.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Let me indicate at this point, honourable members, I'm not sure if, or I didn't think that it was necessary for an induction when you affirm or swear. I am saying this because if it is found that information that you provide to this committee, either orally or in writing, and I'm talking from the first witness up to you, if it is found that the evidence that you provide before this committee, either orally or in writing, has been distorted, there are serious consequences. And we hope that this will apply to every other witness that appears beyond this point. We didn't think it was necessary to underline it, but we are underlining it nevertheless. Advocate Venaro, it is 10-2. Could you be done by 20 past, sir?
Sorry to disturb, but just as I just want to find out if we're going to get the presentation. If we're not, that's fine. Sorry.
We members have got to your presentation. I think what you just have to do is to spend the next 29 minutes to take them through the silent features.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. Thank you very much. We're very grateful for the opportunity to present to this very important inquiry. While grateful, we're not here with much delight. In fact, we're here with extraordinarily high levels of anger due to the fact that we shouldn't be here. We should be discussing things that should take our broadcasting sector forward and not things that are taking us back to the era of apartheid, and how to rebuild things that essentially we've been working on for the last 23 years and that have been systematically undermined by a group of narrow-minded functional morons. So I would ask, seeing as we don't have the presentation up on the screens, if you would do us the delight of following us as we go through our presentation. I'm on the slide that talks about Media Monitoring Africa, and it's not as an advert, it's more about the fact that it gives you a sense of of why we're here and what our role in relation to the SABC is. So Media Monitoring Africa, MMA for short, was started specifically to monitor the SABC's coverage in the run-up to our first democratic elections. Because there was a concern at the time about whether or not the SABC would be able to deliver free and fair content in the run-up to those vital elections. Since then, we've monitored all elections coverage periods in South Africa, and my colleague Tandi will be presenting some of the critical findings of that. So we've also appeared here before on a number of occasions, and I need to unfortunately remind this house that we were here in 2008, not in this precise venue, it was one of the smaller ones upstairs, before the NCOP was the last time to talk about the SABC specifically. It was on the Broadcast Amendment Bill, where we warned in September 2008, and we'll happily make the papers for this and the amendments to the Broadcast Amendment Bill, we warned the committee that if they did not make sufficient and necessary changes to the Broadcast Amendment Act, the crises at the SABC would continue, and in fact they would deepen. And here we are now with the SABC in a state of close to something that is akin to hell, I suspect. So there are four parts of our presentation. The first is around the crisis and how we got there, very briefly. Then we're going to talk about our research that we've done, and the value that we bring to this is that we've done over 200 different media monitoring projects. We're an independent NGO, and we're funded by international and local donors. And let me also make a very quick point about this, because I realize that sometimes these allegations are made against civil society organizations that we're somehow the stooge of international affairs and the like. The organizations that we are supported by have all of their documentation up online. Their members are South Africans. The strings that are attached to the funding we get require us to submit audits. They require us to meet our mandate, which is in line with the human rights objective and indeed the principles contained in our constitution. So we reject with contempt any such allegations directed in our general direction. So we're going to talk about the SABC coverage of the South African local government elections and how basically they have failed the people of South Africa. We're then going to go back in time and talk about Verwoerd's ghost in relation to the SABC protest ban coverage. And then we're going to touch a little bit on the selling the family jewels, and that's around the SABC and multi-choice deal. So if you look at kind of where we are, we would have noticed that not the last Parliamentary Portfolio Committee meeting, but in fact the one before that, the SABC board, when there actually were more than one member, assured everyone that there was no crisis at the SABC. Yet if you look at the figures, 12 CEOs since 2008, 12. This is not a stable institution. We've had three boards in 10 years, excluding the interim board. On one of the slides that you've got before you, you'll see that it's titled Crisis, What Crisis? And what we did was a bit of fun, was we took Mr. Motsoeneng's quotes from the media. We routinely analyze different media, and we have taken all of the elements of what he's been quoted as saying in approximately 30 to 40 South African media over a year's period. And if you look at that word cloud, what strikes you is that nowhere on that word cloud do you see SABC. What you do see rather largely is Cloudy's first name and other words that don't necessarily relate to anything directly related to the SABC's public service mandate. This is why we're in the crisis that we're in.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I would like to take the next few minutes to talk about the SABC's coverage of the local elections. And I'll just focus on a few of the key findings that we have. Our monitoring period was the 1st of June to the 10th of August. We monitored approximately 73 different media, including all of the SABC platforms and its various competitors. For this purpose, we want to focus on how the SABC specifically performed during the period. And it's critical that the SABC adheres to the highest standards of broadcasting, and that is to say that it's the coverage that is diverse, coverage that is equitable, and coverage that is fair. The first finding I'd like to go through is the political party coverage. And what we are seeing in these results are that the top five parties have been focused on. And this indicates that the SABC treated the coverage of the elections more as national elections and not necessarily as local elections. What we would have liked to see with the local election coverage would be more prominence given to independent candidates, to smaller parties. But so what we have seen is more coverage and prominence given to the top five. Those parties being the ANC, the DA, the EFF, NFP, and IFP. And what's interesting to note, if you see, I'm making reference to the political party slides in the presentation, is that on the dedicated election debates on SABC 1 and SABC 2, on those programs, you do see a variance in the results where other parties are given a platform. But if you look at SABC, other channels overall, you do see very similar trends with the political party coverage that is given. Then I'd like to move on to the voices that we heard, and focusing on gender. Now, gender is an issue that isn't spoken about as much as it should be, and we, through all of our research, we do take a very gender-focused element to the findings. So we'd like to just touch on what we've seen also during these local elections. And again, given the SABC's mandate, it has a greater responsibility to ensure that there's more equitable coverage and more women's voices are heard. Having said that, we do see that this hasn't been the case during this monitoring period, where you have an average breakdown of 24% male, 24% female, sorry, and 76% male, and that's on a relatively global average of gender breakdown. With the SABC's results, we look at four big SABC platforms, and this is the results are far below that general average, where you have various channels, Ukhozi FM sitting at 10% female and 90% male, Umhlobo Wenene sitting at 14% female. So these trends are very worrying, and you know, these results in itself is a failure to meet its mandate. Moving on to looking at whether the coverage was fair or not. And for us, fairness in the election period is critical, and it's imperative that that all media cover the elections fairly, but more importantly so, the SABC. And the reason for this is that fairness of coverage has a huge impact on the overall nature of the elections. So we have various indicators that we look at in terms of bias reporting. And this isn't necessarily one item that is biased or one element, but it's rather a pattern over time that we analyze. And for the first time in our monitoring history of the elections, and as William mentioned earlier, we've been monitoring every election period since 1994, for the first time, we have seen systemic bias in the SABC's coverage of the elections. And again, this is a failure to meet its public service mandate. What I mean by when I say that we found bias, the results show that there's only a 10% bias in the coverage. And this doesn't sound that bad, that terrible. But if we focus in on that 10%, what we find is there's channel-specific bias, which which hasn't been there before. You look at SABC2 at the Tonga and Denda News, that's sitting at 34% of its coverage was biased. Morning Live on SABC2, 22% biased. SABC3, English News, 15% bias. So just to give you an indication of what we're seeing when we talk about bias in those top three, or top, I'm going to focus on the top two. In the SABC Tonga Vendor News, for every three stories put forward in their news bulletin, a third of them indicated that there was bias. Of those biased stories, 84% of bias favoured the ANC. Looking at SABC Morning Live, SABC 2 Morning Live, we see a 22% biased coverage. And what we're seeing is that ANC was accessed double as much as the DA and five times more than the EFF. And for us, bias indicates favoring versus unfavoring, favoring of a political party, not giving a political party a chance to respond if there are allegations made or stories that appear, as well as language used within the story covered. So just to reiterate, it is the first time that we are seeing this amount of bias come in. And I think just to state that we are aware that there is going to be subjective, various elements of subjective broadcasting, and that you can't necessarily always get response from various political parties, but it is the SABC and other media have a responsibility to try and balance the coverage as much as possible. And given the results, the programs in question have served to undermine the mandate of the SABC and its credibility during the election period.
Thank you. So what those findings, we believe, clearly indicates, and I'm sorry that we've had to rush through them, we have also sent, you'll be aware, members, copies of the full report, which are publicly available, and we are very happy to discuss with anyone if they would like to have them unpacked in more detail. But what they do indicate is there is the impact of this crisis on the public broadcaster in an election period. There can be arguably no other greater period when fairness is required. And to its credit, the SABC in previous elections have, despite certain errors here and there, have performed admirably well. So this isn't a thing that this has always been that way. No. In fact, we've frequently pointed out that the SABC previous to these elections have covered more stories, more political parties in greater diversity, often had greater levels of gender, often covered more children's issues better than other media. And in these elections, they didn't. And we believe that this is directly linked to these issues. If we now turn to the protest ban, I think we're familiar with the basics of it, and they're written before you, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but we do know that journalists were fired for doing their job, and I believe that this is, again, linked to the thing that was raised by the chair at the start of the session. I think that in addition to the outrage that the members here have expressed to this and the recommendations, the callousness with which the SABC themselves responded to this sickens me to my stomach. It's repulsive and simply disgusting, and they cannot be allowed to get away with their response to it. Aside from everything else, they owe their journalists a significant groveling apology before the nation for the fact that they said this has nothing to do with the SABC. Moving back to the protest ban, we know that this was also supported by the minister, and I know that she'll be appearing later, and I'm hoping that you're going to put some difficult questions to her on this particular issue, because she supported it despite the fact that it being clearly and blatantly in violation of our constitution and the SABC's own code of conduct, irrespective of whether it's the ones that are illegal or not and their editorial policies. So MMA, SOS, which is the support of our colleagues and the Freedom of Expression Institute, took a case to ICASA, the CCC, and we won. And as part of that, as you're aware, because the regulator presented, I think, first among the first to you, we wanted to see if they complied with the order. So we started to do some research, and we didn't believe that they were complying, given that there was no official statement issued to their journalists and no instruction to them that they should reverse it. And clearly this is important because it had a chilling effect in the news, and we know for a fact, and this is also covered in our elections report, that the protest ban was in full force during the run-up to our local government elections. And the critical point here is simply this. If you can't believe what they're showing you in and around public violence of elections, how on earth do you expect ordinary citizens to believe just about anything else that you put on the channels? This is a massive implication for our democratic space. So the various data is there specifying what periods we monitored. We monitored 3 separate weeks. Over 95 bulletins and 950 news items were monitored. Now, if you get to that page, it's called Key Findings of Violent Footage, and you'll see two pie charts that look almost like the inverse of each other. And what they show is this, is that we asked where protest items were covered. Did the footage show people involved in active destruction? Because that's what they said they didn't want people to see for a variety of reasons. Some of them moronic and others slightly less moronic and others frankly just laughable. But what you'll see there is that in the overwhelming majority they failed to show the actual violence. What they did show in the pie chart tool on the right of that slide is that they showed the aftermath, which is what they said they were going to do. Bear in mind, these are 3-week periods after the protest ban and after the SABC said they were complying with it. In other words, we believe that they have actively deceived or lied to us, and it's in the public interest that we understand that they've lied to us about these particular issues. So if we look at the protest ban, we see that violent protests were covered, but far less than non-violent protests, both in terms of prominence in the bulletins and in terms of the number of stories. So the violent protests were often put further back in the news bulletins, despite all of the things going on. And the footage of the aftermath was shown. So we believe that this is pretty conclusive evidence and supports the regulators' finding that the SABC is in complete violation of their order. Moving now to our other item in relation to the dodgy deal between the SABC and MultiChoice. Media Monitoring Africa and the SOS are currently involved in a competition case. There was a matter heard, I think, just over a week and a half ago. Forgive my dates on that. But so we do have a vested interest in this case, and our reason for entering it is that we were opposed to it as it changed a fundamental policy issue of the SABC. And it also effectively sold off the SABC's programming archives, and it did this all too cheaply. You will know, I'm sure, from your other experience in relation to broadcasting matters, that while 553 million rand over 5 years sounds like a lot of money, in broadcast terms, this is not a lot of money. And yet, look at what they got for it. So MultiChoice did very well. The SABC clearly did not do very well. Well, some within the SABC allegedly did. We know that Mr. Motsoeneng apparently got some nice bonuses, which is a bit like rewarding a paedophile by giving him access to more children. So we know that the SABC has also not been willing to hand over relevant documents, although I understand recently that they have handed over documents. And yet at the same, so there's something funny going on here, right? There's an unwillingness to talk about these things, and we know from our own court experience that they were unwilling to hand over documents, or they said they lost them, or they couldn't find them. And yet, MultiChoice says, no, this is fine, this is a normal deal. I don't know what you're going on about. This is a perfectly ordinary licensing agreement, right? Those things have been stated in court papers and in public forum. So the question that we have to ask around that and that we would like you to engage with is if it was an ordinary deal, why were there concerns about the regulator and whether or not they thought that this would pass muster, right? I don't imagine that if it's an ordinary deal that you would automatically put in a clause that says, we might need to check if this goes with the regulator. And the second question then is, why would you include a clause stating that the SABC CEO and the MultiChoice CEO will meet annually to discuss matters? Is that part of every agreement that you put that in just for them to sit down at a table and say, okay, let's discuss matters? Is that part of ordinary licensing agreements? I'm not sure. The point is, though, and we would support this Honourable Committee calling before some of the people from MultiChoice because we are certain that they would be far more willing to give valid answers than perhaps some of those that are presented from the SABC. So moving to our conclusions and some of our requests, we see that the research has demonstrated we believe that the SABC has failed to meet its public service mandate, especially during one of the most crucial periods in the run-up to local government elections. We've found for the first time systemic bias on programs, which we believe constitutes a clear threat to our democracy.